理课堂听 class.com
Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Who's rocking the cradle of civilization? Keep listening and you'll find out. Hi everyone, my name is Angela. Today we've got a culture article. And in the studio with me are two other studio classroom teachers to talk with us about this article on culture. The first is my husband, Troy.
Well, thank you, dear, for calling me your husband. Admitting that on the air, I think, is a great thing. Actually, we have had listeners in the past who know that you are my wife, and they've commented to me that when I am leading the program, I will say, and this is my wife, Angela, and they appreciate that.
Well,
so thanks.
You certainly, Troy. Actually, I requested that you join us for this article.
Oh, good.
Well, with Troy and me is Jason. Hi, Jason.
Hello, Angela, Troy. It's great to be here with you today.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting through this article because it has been fun for me to study and I've learned a lot. The title of the article in your Advanced magazine is called The Spoils of War. Now, in English, this phrase can have more than one meaning. So I'll ask Jason to tell us, what is the more common meaning of the spoils of war?
When we think of the spoils of war, we usually think of what is taken by an army, perhaps, that comes in and invades a country, and they win. So they will take, or plunder, they will take all the art, maybe the jewels, anything that they can get their hands on. And so that's usually the meaning that we will use when we talk about the spoils of war.
Right. The conquering army then receives all the treasures of the country that is conquered. But in this article, Troy, the spoils of war has another meaning.
It does, because here we're not talking about so much actual spoils, things that were simply left, you know, in the country that the invading army took, but the people within the country itself. The people who are the nationals of that country are robbing their country of its national treasures.
They are actually spoiling the country because of the conditions that war has created. Well, this was written by a U.S. News and World Report writer. We have permission to reprint this here in our magazine. And it begins by saying, endangered archaeological sites are threatened with destruction. Well, let's hear about the origin of this word, archaeological.
The origins of the word archaeological. This is the adjective form of the noun archaeology. The word archaeology has its roots in ancient Greek and is made up of two parts, arch and ology. Let's look at the ology part of the word first. This comes from the word logos, meaning a word or a study of something. So whenever we see a word with the ology ending, we know that it means the study of something. Biology is the study of life. Zoology is the study of things in a zoo, animals. So what is archaeology the study of? The arch comes from the Greek adjective archaeos, meaning old or ancient. So archaeology is the study of old or ancient things, in particular ancient cultures and civilizations.
That is very interesting. Now, this is the adjective form here, archaeological. And then we have the noun form, which is actually the name of the scientist, the person who does the study.
Right.
And he is called
an archaeologist.
That's right. And there are other words that we use in English that come from this root word at the beginning of archaeology. Troy mentioned one as we were listening.
Archaic.
Archaic.
Right.
Just means very old.
Mm-hmm.
So today we're talking about endangered archaeological sites that are, mm-hmm. that means places.
Mm-hmm.
These
sure.
are places that are threatened with destruction.
And today we talk about endangered animals or endangered species,
mm-hmm.
Things that are under the threat of being made extinct. And in this case, there is the fear that these archaeological sites, these very ancient places of culture and civilizations from many, many years ago are endangered of being extinct. In
yes.
other words, the things of that society, that culture, might no longer exist or be found because people have stolen them. And they're
mm-hmm.
trading them on places like eBay.com, and they're trading them to secret buyers. So who knows where this stuff will end up?
And these can never be replaced either.
Right.
Well, let's hear today's first reading, and I'm asking Troy to read that for us.
Sennacherib was king of the universe, king of the four corners of the world, and king of Assyria. From his lofty perspective on a throne in Nineveh, just outside the modern Iraqi city of Mosul, those titles all meant the same thing: unparalleled power. Nineveh was the largest city in the known world in Sennacherib's day, about 700 BC, and his palace was one of the grandest, its walls decorated with reliefs depicting his feats in war and engineering. Art historian John Russell knows those walls well. Prior to 1991, he photographed thousands of carved reliefs covering Sennacherib's 90-foot-long throne room. So he was shocked when, in 1995, he saw the reliefs for sale, chopped into pieces and chipped down to look like separate finds. Sennacherib's magnificent palace had been reduced to piles of rubble by looters intent on selling off the art, sadly, a common symptom of more than a decade of chaos that has devastated some of the world's richest cultural resources.
No, this is not a history lesson. This is a lesson in culture. But we have to talk a little bit about history because this is about archaeology, after all, right?
That's mm-hmm. right. We need to understand the history behind this particular area of the world.
We are talking about the area of the Middle East, today known as Iraq.
Mm.
All of our listeners are familiar with
yes.
Iraq because it has been in the news recently,
mm-hmm.
just day in and day out, 24 hours a day at times. But we're taking a little different look at it today.
Mm-hmm.
We want to look back. And this is the period of time about 700 B.C. You'll see there on line 11. I did a little research and found that this is about the time of the Zhou Dynasty in China.
Mm.
So our listeners will know that this was very long ago.
Was that during the Bronze Age?
No, the Bronze Age was earlier, much, much earlier.
Mm.
But the Zhou Dynasty matched about the time that Sennacherib was
sure.
king of the universe.
Well, I did look up the name Sennacherib, of course, and it's a name you can even find in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
But his name is also printed on other existing tablets. Sometimes they were cuneiform tablets, parchment, things that people would actually write on in those days. And he was around. He was the king of Assyria and Babylonia between 705 and 681 B.C.,
okay, well, it says here, Jason, that from Sennacherib's lofty perspective on a mm-hmm. throne in Nineveh. Now, what might we mean, lofty perspective?
Well, we think of something being lofty. It's high up.
Mm-hmm.
And his perspective or his view.
His point mm-hmm. of view.
His point of view. And so on the throne in Nineveh, or the city that he was ruling from, he was able to have this high point of view of this whole area.
These, the beginning of this reading, we read the titles that were given mm-hmm. to Sennacherib, and they all meant one thing. What did it mean, Troy?
Well, it simply meant unparalleled power. And when In fact, it's one of our vocabulary focus words here, unparalleled power. It means an ability or right to control people or events that is greater or stronger than all others. And of course, the idea that many people had in those days of their ruler or their mm-hmm. king was that he was a god.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they had the same idea of Sennacherib too.
Well, in fact, there might have been other reasons why he was given these titles. It says that Nineveh was the largest city in the known world in right. Sennacherib's time. Now, when it says in the known world, what does that imply, Jason?
It was in the world that they were living in, that they had knowledge of. So there may have been other civilizations, but they were not aware of that.
Right. At this time, the people living here were not aware of the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
So there might have been larger cities in China at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, his palace was one of the grandest. Its walls were decorated with reliefs. Now, when we say a relief in this sense, it is a work of art featuring the projection of figures or forms from a flat background, such as a painting or a drawing. If you look up at our title, at the top of the page, you will see the picture of a lion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is actually a relief.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I must tell our students that this photograph, plus the photograph of the other two little things that look like they're taken from a museum, those pictures were taken by a local photographer named Zhang Hongzheng.
Oh.
So, yeah, he's a personal friend of ours, and so he allowed us to use these photographs, and
okay.
we're really grateful to
him. Well, if he's listening to the program today, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Zhang.
Sure. So you just said a relief then is a work of art, and it's projected. It's
mm-hmm.
a projected figure or form. So in a sense, it's not actually painted into the wall, but it's painted on the wall. Okay.
Right, and it could be tiles, too. Mm. But the idea is that you can feel the shape of it.
It raises
right.
away from the wall itself.
And these reliefs depicted, now that means they showed mm. as pictures, his feats. Now, when we talk about feet here, we're not talking about what he walked on. What are we
his
talking about?
His accomplishments.
Yeah.
And so we're talking about his accomplishments in war and engineering. So in the palace, the example they gave of the palace, that would be an engineering mm-hmm. Accomplishment that he had, was to build this huge palace.
It's right. interesting that Sennacherib, he was not the oldest son of his father, Sargon II, but mm-hmm. he was chosen as the crown prince, and he was made military governor of the northern frontier of Assyria. And it said he was very bold in difficult situations, and he was very firm in dispensing justice. So that's what kept him in good stead as a king in his day.
So he didn't have a peaceful rule. He was probably at war a good deal of the time. And yet, his kingdom was so wealthy, he was able to build these great palaces. Well, art historian John Russell, an American, says that he knows well those walls mm. on Sennacherib's palace. And why is that?
Well, historically, most of us may remember well Desert Storm, when the United States first was in the Middle East to help Kuwait because Iraq had invaded Kuwait.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, then, there were all of these historical objects, art objects of art that were there. And so this guy, John Russell, prior to that time, which actually war introduces into a country lots of changes and there's lots of upheaval that takes mm-hmm. place. And the result was that people began to steal lots of these archaeological works of art. So John Russell, prior to 1991, actually photographed, it says here, thousands of these carved reliefs.
Right. So he had been there, had taken photographs of these reliefs covering Sennacherib's 90-foot-long throne room.
Wow.
So he was shocked
mm-hmm.
in 1995 when he saw these reliefs for sale. Now, someone didn't take the whole 90-foot-long
no.
wall, did they?
No, they didn't. They actually chopped them up or cut them up into pieces and then chipped them down to make them look like they were separate artifacts or artwork, and so, and then tried to sell these.
Yes, we use the word finds here. That's one of our archaeological terms today. Mm-hmm. And a find, in this sense, is a noun. It's something very good or valuable that one discovers unexpectedly.
Mm-hmm. Somebody might say, hey, I've got this find. Would you like to see what it is, or would you like to buy it?
Mm-hmm. Or I went shopping at the market today. Mm-hmm. I made a great find.
That's right.
And so it's this idea of looking through a lot of things, and then suddenly you come up on something unexpectedly, mm-hmm. something that you really want or something that is valuable.
So John Russell was horrified to see that these reliefs had been mm-hmm. chopped into pieces and then sold probably over the internet to would-be, you know, buyers, anybody who wanted to pay the money to have something like this. So Sennacherib's magnificent palace had been reduced, it says, to piles of rubble.
Mm-hmm. And this, again, this is something that is irreplaceable, irreparable. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was there before 1991. Four mm-hmm. years later, 1995, the destruction had already been done.
So in a sense, we're looking at artifacts here, archaeological artwork that is over 2,500 years old.
Yes.
It says reduced to rubble. What does this mean?
Well, rubble, usually when something is destroyed, like a building collapses mm-hmm. and it breaks into small pieces, all that is considered rubble.
Right. And sometimes we use the word rubbish.
That's right.
It means garbage or mm-hmm. trash. Mm. So to be reduced to rubble means that it had been chopped into small pieces and all that's left is like trash.
Sure. And we call the people who do that looters. L-O-O-T-E-R-S. It's a noun that simply means someone who steals things, especially from places that have been damaged in a war or riot, a looter.
We hear this word quite often in the news because the stealing that goes on after following a war or a riot mm-hmm. Is called looting.
And the verb for of looter, the noun, is looting. Mm-hmm. So people may go into these museums, in fact, in Iraq, as they have done, and they have looted mm-hmm. these archaeological pieces. Or they've gone to archaeological sites and stolen stuff. And that actually, that's been going on for years. That's true in most places in the world mm-hmm. where there are old archaeological artifacts. Or people will even dig graves up mm-hmm. and yeah. they'll steal right. stuff. They'll loot.
Right. We know that happened to the pyramids in Egypt. That many of the pyramids had been looted before the last century when archaeologists really began this more scientific kind of study of these ancient mm-hmm. Historical sites. Well, why do they do that? Because they can sell this stuff.
Mm. That's right.
Who buys this kind of thing?
Well, many private collectors that have a lot of money, mm-hmm. and it's very prestigious to own these very mm-hmm. Unique and rare artifacts. And then also museums will buy them as well. But I think museums tend to try to make sure that things are authentic and they're
registered with the government.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So most of the time it's private collectors.
Mm-hmm. Well, it says, sadly, this is a common symptom of more than a decade of chaos, more than 10 years of chaos that has devastated some of the world's richest cultural resources.
Sure. And at this point, we're talking about Iraq. Mm-hmm. And we will see in the next section of our reading that Iraq is an area called the cradle of civilization.
Well, let's go to the next reading right now.
Rocking the Cradle. Known as the cradle of civilization, Iraq's river valleys house some of the world's oldest cities. Sites like Ur, Nineveh, and Nimrud are powerful draws for archaeologists seeking clues to the origins of civilization and biblical scholars looking for the historical foundation of Old Testament stories. The region is also home to majestic mosques and shrines like those of Samarra, as well as Persian-influenced sites like Ctesiphon. In an area continuously inhabited for over 5,000 years, the concentration of ruins is remarkable. Ancient cities were built of mud brick, and as they collapsed, later buildings were layered on top. After centuries of rebuilding, the mounds formed by these ancient settlements, known as tells, sometimes rise 8 or 9 stories above the otherwise flat, featureless desert.
The title of this section is Rocking the Cradle. What do we mean by that literally, Jason?
Well, usually when we say rocking the cradle, we think of a baby that is laying in the cradle or the bed and moving back and forth, and it's supposed to be peaceful, causing them to go to sleep.
But that's not what we're talking about here today, Troy. What does it mean here?
Well, here we're talking about the cradle of civilization. Sometimes the meaning of cradle would be the crux or the center point of something. In this case, it's kind of the center of all civilization, had its beginnings at this place in the Middle East, and Iraq, particularly because of the Tigris and the Euphrates River running through the country.
Mm-hmm.
So in an area like this, where you have these two major rivers, the Tigris and the Euphrates, civilization was allowed to develop and to flourish.
It says here that Iraq's river valleys house some of the world's oldest cities. Now, what do we mean by housing?
Many times the word house is a noun.
Mm-hmm.
We say we live in our house, the place where we live. But this is a verb, and it means to provide someone or something with a place to stay.
Sure.
So this river valley provides a place for these cities to be. This is the cradle of civilization because it's like putting a baby in a cradle. Well, here we have civilization, its beginnings.
Yes, the origination or the beginning, the birth of civilization probably began at this in this area.
Well, some of the cities are named. Ur, Nineveh, and Nimrod are powerful draws for archaeologists. Now, when we say something is a powerful draw, what does that mean?
It means it's pulling them to there because of the fact there is so much history here.
Mm-hmm.
And these are some of the original cities in the civilization. There's so much history there that this draws archaeologists to come and study.
It's very attractive to them.
Okay, so they're seeking clues. They're looking for information that will help them discover the origins of civilization. And biblical scholars are primarily interested in this because it will help them to better understand the historical foundation of the Old Testament stories.
And, of course, the Jews, who would be interested in the Old Testament, as well as Christians and others, are not the only ones interested in this region for significant religious reasons. But what's another group?
Well, the Muslims have a great deal of interest in this because of the mosques that are there. We see majestic mosques, so very beautiful, in just large mosques and shrines that can be found there.
You know, I'd been reading about the city of Ur, which is down at the southern end of this region.
Close to the Persian Gulf.
Right. It was believed to be almost on the Gulf at the time. At this time. It was established between 4,000 and 3,500 B.C.
Wow.
So we are talking like
6,000 years ago.
About 6,000
years
ago. And by the year 2000 B.C., archaeologists, due to their digging down into this area, found that the city of Ur had about 250,000 people living there.
Well, I know that when you read in the book of Genesis in the Bible, that's where I first ran into the meaning, or at least this place they called Ur of the Chaldees, because that's where Abraham, and who's considered to be, of course, the father of the Jews, Judaism, Christianity, and the Muslims also claim Abraham, too, as their father. So it's quite interesting.
Right. It says that this area has been continuously inhabited for over 5,000 years. So in terms of Chinese civilization, we're talking about back into China's Bronze Age.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's primarily because of its location. It's very close to sources of water and floodplains where planting food was very, they were able to harvest and plant the food that was necessary to sustain life.
Right. There were fish from the waters, and then there were marshes for growing vegetables and things.
And transportation as well. The rivers, many times using that for transportation.
Well, today, the concentration of ruins is remarkable. Now, when we say there is a concentration of something, that just means that there is a lot of it all in the same place.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so these ancient cities, though, were built of mud brick. And as they collapsed, then later buildings were layered on top. So they were, in a sense, after one dynasty or generation or one whole period of history passed, another group of people or civilization mm-hmm. would build buildings on top of those former, those prior old ruins.
So the word collapse means to suddenly fall down or to fall inward. Mm. Now, why would they build their homes of mud bricks if they could collapse so easily?
Well, I think that because of the fact the natural resources that they had mm-hmm. was there was sand and there was a lot of mud, and it was very easy to do that. There was not a lot of wood
right.
and things like that. So that's why they had to use the mud to build on.
So it sort of made a feature that mm-hmm. we still see today called mounds, and we have a special word for it. Tells,
T-E-L-L-S.
That's used here on line 18. It says, mounds formed by these ancient settlements where the mud bricks collapsed and then more homes were built on top of it. So pretty soon you had this just little mountain mm-hmm. out there in the middle of right. the desert, and that today is called a tell.
I see. So you have one ancient civilization's buildings built on top of another civilization's mm-hmm. buildings.
Yes. And sometimes these rise 8 or 9 stories above the flat desert.
Mm-hmm.
That is a little mountain
right.
that sticks out in this otherwise featureless
sure.
desert.
And as deserts are, because they don't have lots of grass lands, they don't have trees. And so generally speaking, they are featureless. There isn't anything there. These buildings mm-hmm. would be quite prominent and easy to see mm-hmm. from a distance.
Well, let's listen to today's skit.
Stan, our archaeological expedition is almost over, and we haven't seen anything except sand. Professor Chen will be so disappointed.
Yeah, it would be great if we could find a site that could tell us how ancient peoples lived, worked, or worshipped their gods.
Yeah, a tell would be nice.
Fred, do you really think we'll find a hotel out here in the middle of nowhere?
Not a hotel, a tell, Stan. Something like a hill. Made up of the remains of a progression of historic settlements.
Huh? Oh, you mean tell.
That's right, Stan. Tell. An old Arabic word meaning mound. Speaking of which, look over there. Do you see that small mound in the distance?
That huge pile of dirt? Yeah, so what?
That's a tell, Stan. That's what I'm talking about. Woohoo!
Oh, wow, what a great find. That tell probably contains thousands of artifacts.
Grab your shovel.
Oh, this is so exciting. I can't wait to tell Professor Chen.
Come on.
What a fascinating lesson. Listeners, we hope you learned more than just English today, but gained a new appreciation for the work of archaeologists. Well, Jason, any last word?
Well, I think it's important that, as we will learn more in tomorrow's article, is that we need to make sure that things are preserved mm-hmm. as when wars occur, and that we do what we can to preserve history so that people can
right.
enjoy that.
Sure.
Well, listeners, join us again tomorrow for more right here on Advanced.